Gospel, Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 through 25. Now the birth of Jesus, the Messiah, took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been engaged to Joseph, but before they lived together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. Her husband Joseph, being a righteous man and unwilling to expose her to public disgrace, planned to dismiss her quietly. But just when he had resolved to do this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." All this took place to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet. "Look, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall name him Emmanuel, which means, God is with us." When Joseph awoke from sleep, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took her as his wife, but had no marital relations with her until she had borne a son, and he named him Jesus, the word of the Lord.
One of my favorite Christmas carols is one of the lesser-known ones. It starts out posing the question, how far is it to Bethlehem? And the answer, according to this, is not very far. It kind of invites us to imagine that we are actually physically going on a journey to Bethlehem to see the Christ child, and it's not going to be very far. And then when we get there, what are we going to have to worry about? Can we see the little child? Is he within? If we lift the wooden latch, may we go in? May we stroke the creatures there, ox, ass, or sheep? May we peep like them and see Jesus asleep? If we touch his tiny hand, will he awake? Will he know we've come so far just for his sake? This song really then transforms into more, it's a spiritual journey rather than just a physical journey. Are we going to be actually able to encounter this child? That's the spiritual reality. Today, I think that's what the story of Joseph is about, too. We can ask, how far is it for Bethlehem for him? Well, it's not very far. From Nazareth, where he and Mary lived, to Bethlehem, where Jesus was born, is about 80 miles as the crow flies. A pregnant woman riding on a donkey might take her a week to get there, maybe, make sure that she's safe and comfortable. But it's not all that far. Terms of distance, we'd go that in about an hour, right, out here, get on those straight roads. But what Joseph needed, it was a much longer journey before he could make that journey of 80 miles. It was a spiritual journey for him. And to be able to literally go to Bethlehem, he first had to go spiritually to Bethlehem, the place where he could move from just being this young man who thought he was starting his life out and his career with a wonderful woman that he was going to marry. And he had to go all that distance to becoming the stepfather of God himself. And how does that happen? I think there's three stages to this journey that he's on. And I put it this way because I think this story is told because as interesting as it is to know what Joseph went through, it's more important for us to realize that we are all called to go on this spiritual journey. We are all called to make the journey of our spirits to get to Bethlehem, the place where we see Christ alive and present in this world. As I said, there's three stages to this journey. We need to move from living a life that society expects of us. We need to move to the second phase, which is living the life that we choose and expect for ourselves, to finally letting go of both of those and letting God's will be done and actually living the life that God has in mind for us. Let's look at Joseph's journey in light of that. He starts out, as we all do, just living up to the expectations of society. And back then, the expectations in his society were really pretty simple for a young man. He had to work hard to learn a craft, and when he had learned that and can support himself, Then he could be married and have a family. Well, we know that he actually learned a good craft. He became a carpenter. And when he had learned it well enough that he could go off and earn a living by himself, his family thought, all right, now it's time for him to have a wife. He didn't even have the say in that. Marriages were arranged in his day. And so his family looked around the village there to find a young woman who would make a good wife for him, who would make a good mother of children. And Joseph's parents went to Mary's parents, and they would have negotiated a deal. Is it okay? Can we get married? What kind of bride price? What kind of dowry? What can my son offer here to take care of your daughter? And the agreement was sealed, and they were betrothed, which was like being engaged, only more so. Joseph must have been thrilled. The dreams of what society said you were going to do were just right there. He was ticking them off, and life should have been good for him. But the sad thing is, it's never enough, is it? We see this very simply just in relationships, in all marriages, don't we? I get to see marriages at the beginning there, where the couple is in love. They've seen all these romantic comedies on the movies, on TV. They've looked at all these bridal shows and all the bridal magazines, and they have this vision of this wonderful wedding. They have this vision that they are madly in love with their soulmate, and they are going to be joined together, and their life is going to go merrily forward. And what a blessing it is going to be to have those cute little kids who are like in those little Pampers commercials, just cute all the time and no problem whatsoever. They all buy into that. But it's not enough, right? It's not realistic. It's not real. Real marriage starts, what, 3 years down the line? 7 years down the line? Where one morning you wake up and look at the person next to you and say, who is this person? This isn't the person that of my dreams that I married. This is a real person with aches and pains and problems and gripes and all this and that. And that, if you are lucky and mature, is when the marriage really begins, right? Then you begin to deal with one another, and you either build a relationship that is real and sound, or it falls apart. We all, and it's important to go on this first phase of the journey, to get our lives together, as one of my teachers says, to build a container for our lives, to know what we stand for, what our values are, what our goals are, and before we can determine them for ourselves, society gives them to us. But they're never enough. I remember stages in my career as a pastor quite a while back, where I literally could look at my life one day and say, it is really good. I've worked hard. I've gotten to a place where I think things are really well. I think I understand things theologically. I think I'm pretty good. I've got this pastoring thing down. I've got a wonderful church that I love to be part of. I've got some deep and friends in my life that I think are going to be there for me all my life. And I'm just going to go on and enjoy this now. Guess what? It's never enough. There's that old phrase, you know, you want to make God laugh? Tell him your plans. In all of those areas of my life, you know, I hit troubles as a pastor. I hit challenges that shook me. Friendships were threatened and hit rough patches. Even what I thought I knew about God and all my brilliant theology that I thought, I really don't have to go back to classes anymore because I've got this down. All of a sudden, I realized, oh no, God is much more, and I've got so many more questions. How foolish of me to think that just the goals of society would be enough for me. So poor Joseph, just when he thinks his life couldn't get any better, all of a sudden, this beloved fiance comes to him and says, guess what? I'm pregnant. And Joseph knows it's not his. And all of a sudden, stage one of his life falls apart and crumbles. And he has to make that second phase of the journey to Bethlehem. And what is that? That is the point in life when all of a sudden we have to grow up, we have to start making decisions based on what we have experienced and valued, not what somebody else has to tell us. We have to be the adult in the room and not just act out of pettiness or anger or selfishness and all those other things. We actually have to be mature and rational and caring and make good decisions. It's a hard transition, and many of us don't want to make it, but life calls us to that. And Joseph had to make this transition, and he made it well. He really, when he had to make his own decision, did an excellent job of it. You should know that in according to the law, according to tradition in Joseph's day, in his case, if your fiancé had cheated on you, you had every right to expose her, to drag her before the authorities in your little town and condemn her, and she would be publicly shamed, and she could even be put to death. Joseph had every right to do that. Can you imagine the anger in his heart, the betrayal, the temptation that he must have felt to say, I want to do that. This woman who I trusted and loved betrayed me in this horrible way. She needs to pay for this. But Joseph knew, no, that was not who he was. That was not his deepest values. And what was that going to help anyway? So he decided to take a wiser course of action. He realized he could not trust her, he could not be with her, but he was not going to publicly shame her. He could not stand the thought that she would die and this unborn child might die too. And so he put her quietly away, said, our engagement is broken. You go back to your family, I'll go back to living my life. Now, of course, there'd be talk. Of course, there'd be suspicion. But if he did not open his mouth, no one would know the facts. It was a wise choice, a merciful choice, but it wasn't enough. Why not? As important as it is to come to the point in our life where we can make good choices based on our own values and morals, it's our choice. It was Joseph's choice, and it didn't take into account what God wanted. And until that happened, he hadn't made it to Bethlehem yet. I'm going to tell you a little story. The week after Thanksgiving, I took a week off, and I spent some time with friends in Fargo. But then I thought, I need a little spiritual renewal here to grow a little bit in my faith. And so I went down to this wonderful retreat center north of the Twin Cities where they have wooded acreage there on the edge of a lake there. And they have these little one-room cozy cabins scattered in among the trees there. They call them hermitages. And you can just go there and be uninterrupted by anything. There's no electricity in there. There's a nice little propane stove. There's a little one of those kind of Coleman lantern things on the wall there. Just real cozy. The nicest thing about it is that on the one side there's just this huge open picture window there looking out into the woods and through the trees because they had no leaves on them, out onto the lake, and in front of that big picture window is this cozy big rocking chair. What a thing! They bring you to the cabin, they say, we're not going to disturb you at all, and you can, they give you a basket of nice food there, there's a little hot plate there, you can make coffee for yourself, and I thought, this is going to be perfect. I'm going to sit there and relax and pray, and I took along this spiritual book, a new book by one of my favorite authors, and I thought, I'm going to read this. What better way to grow in my faith, to get reoriented spiritually? Well, because it takes a while to get down there, I got down there around supper time, and in the main lodge, in the main building, you can come and they will have supper at night if people are going to come in from their cabins and eat together. So I went and ate there. And then after supper, the staff said, well, who are any, there was only two of us there. It was a, you know, it's a fall. And the staff said, well, what about supper tonight, tomorrow? We'll make supper for you if you're going to come in. And I looked at the staff and I said, yeah, that'd be great. I want to come in for supper. That was great. So I went out to my little cabin and had a great night's sleep. Got up the next morning and did exactly what I wanted. Made a cup of coffee, sat in that rocking chair, prayed, read that wonderful book, and it was wonderful. I just loved his teachings in that book. They were just resonating with me. I thought, I'm getting so much out of this. And late in the afternoon when it started to get dark, I thought, oh, now I can reward myself for my day of work and prayer and all this by going in and having a nice warm supper and having some good conversation. And so I bundled up and I walked about the quarter mile through the woods up to the main lodge, the main there. And I walk into the dining area and half the lights are off and there's only one staff, no one else is there except for one staff pushing a vacuum cleaner. And that one staff turns off the vacuum cleaner and looks at me in surprise and she said, oh, were you going to come in for supper? We didn't know that. And you know what? I felt myself tightening up inside a little bit, getting a little angry. My expectations are not being met. I wanted to bark out and say, I told you yesterday I was going to be in here. I went out of my way and you didn't do this for me, and I caught myself. I caught myself. I hadn't traveled hundreds of miles and paid some bucks and spent some precious time off to get mad because somebody had forgotten to cook me supper. And so I bundled up and went back out into the dark. By then it was dark, and walked the trail back to my cabin thinking about this. And all of a sudden it dawned on me. My wonderful plans were I was going to sit in the cabin all alone, pray, read the book, be all spiritual. But God says that didn't mean anything unless you were actually able to forgive someone who simply forgot to cook you supper. There was the deeper journey, and by the time I was back to my cabin, I was laughing. That is always the way. Until God gets a hold of us and makes our plans what he wants to, until we open our lives to what he plans to have happen in this world, we have not made it to Bethlehem. We have not made it to the place in our lives in this world where Christ is present. And that's what Joseph had to do. He entered into this third, final phase of his life through a dream. A dream, and that's where he knew God could get to him, because in our dreams, our brains aren't in control, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't have these crazy dreams. When he's out of control, God can enter in and say, this is my plan. Do not put this woman away. She has not cheated on you. She has not betrayed you. Instead, she has trusted me, and she's going to bear my child. And now I'm asking the same of you. I want you to be part of my plan, a plan that exceeds anything that you could anticipate or expect. I want you to be the stepfather of this child and to take care of your wife and this child so that he can actually be born into this world and be present here. That's when Joseph made it all the way to Bethlehem. And this is the journey that all of us are invited to take. Just two little qualifications here. In Joseph's story, this has been condensed down. His three-part journey has been condensed down to, what, a couple weeks? A couple months at most? In our life, it's going to take our whole life to take that journey. And also, the way it's presented in Joseph and the way I presented it now, it makes it look like phase one, phase two, phase three. It isn't that way. It's all mixed up. Guess what? All through our lives, we're going to worry way too much about what other people and what society thinks about us, right? We're never going to be free of that. We're always going to be walking phase one. We're always going to be challenged to go to the second phase of that journey, to be the adult in the room, to grow up and actually make good choices. And we're always going to be invited not to stop with either of those, but to finally open our lives so that God's will can come in and be done in us, through us, and as us. And when that happens, the Christ will be here, and this will be Bethlehem. Amen. Please stand as we sing our next hymn.